Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Pops it down the right left field line. May drop in and does. Rose tying for two. Foley scores. And Peters in. And the Reds lead 6-4.
Well, recently, the commissioner of Major League Baseball said, if you're dead, you've effectively served your lifetime ban from Cooperstown, from the Baseball Hall of Fame, which then hypothetically opens up Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson to be contenders for a spot in the Hall of Fame. Well, a lot of strong feelings about this, especially from this White Sox guy over here, Chris Ranji.
Yeah.
But months ago, when Pete Rose died, Christopher Scalia, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, also author of a new book, 13 books conservatives will love but probably haven't read, he wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal titled, fittingly, Pete Rose is dead, now reinstate him. And joining us now to make that argument for Pete Rose to join the crew in Cooperstown is Christopher Scalia. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, you've got a tough, opposition here in the form of Chris Ranji, who feels very strongly against Pete Rose. But I'll let you make your case. Why? And in case people were wondering, doesn't Scalia sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yes, it's that Scalia, your father, Antonin Scalia, on the former Supreme Court justice. What is your case for Pete Rose joining Cooperstown?
First of all, let me make clear, I do not speak for my father. My father was a Yankee fan. God rest his soul. He didn't know why I was a Reds fan, and would tease me about it, and I would just remind him that the Reds swept the Yankees in 1976, even though I have no memory of that.
Yeah, well, sure, he loved that.
The case for Pete Rose being reinstated, that's the case I focus on, is that these were permanent bans. So even after he died, he was technically still banned from Major League Baseball. But he's dead. He has served his punishment. You don't gain anything by keeping him out. And what you basically do is punish his fans, and especially Cincinnati fans. Now, I know that the people of St. Louis, your listeners, may not care about that very much. But, you know, Pete Rose is such an important figure in Cincinnati. He was a Cincinnati kid and indisputably one of the greatest hitters of all time. So the point is not that he should not have been punished. He should have been. He violated a rule. He didn't show. It took him a very long time to show remorse for it. And so I think the punishment was fitting. But now that he's dead, I think it's appropriate to reinstate him and get him on the ballot for the Hall of Fame. And that's what one thing people don't realize is that Shoeless Joe was on the ballot for the Hall of Fame a couple of times. Pete Rose never had the opportunity because the Hall of Fame changed its rules to make after he was banned to avoid the awkward situation of having him on the ballot when he was banned. So they changed the rules so that somebody who was banned from Major League Baseball could never be on the ballot. All this does is make it so that he can be on the ballot again. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame, but I would understand if voters think that he shouldn't be. I think the key, though, is that, you know, he served his punishment, get him back in the good graces of baseball and give him the chance to be on the ballot and people to vote for him.
My issue with this and this particular infraction has been like, I care way more about this than I care about HGH and performance enhancing drugs, that sort of thing. And the reason is the one thing a sport cannot overcome is if people watching think that it's possible there are players on the field that might be throwing the game because they have money on it. That mm-hmm. will, that's the spirit of competition. If you do that as a player, your sport's dead, because if people don't believe in the outcome, then it's dead. To my argument for it has been, it is a serious enough infraction that you should never be in, alive or dead. And part of it is there's the character clause, which baseball has, you know, the Hall of Fame has, and it matters. You can argue that it should or should not matter. Do you think it should?
I don't have a problem with the character clause. But again, and I think that if he is inducted in the Hall of Fame, it would be appropriate for there needs to be a reference to the fact that he broke an important rule and he compromised the integrity of the game and was banned for the rest of his life. But I think that I don't think bringing him back into the game makes anybody think, oh, gambling's okay. I can do this because I won't really be punished. He still was out of Major League Baseball for 35 years. That was a serious punishment, and his reputation will forever be tainted. So gambling is easier than ever now, and I think Major League Baseball really needs to be careful with what it's doing there. So, and that's a danger of letting Rose in, but I don't think that letting him in is a signal saying gambling's okay, guys, you can do it now. He still served a very significant punishment, and he died without being in the Hall of Fame. He died as basically a baseball exile. He died a very sad figure. And I don't think anybody who sees how his life ended and how he spent the last 35 years of his life will think, well, gambling's worth it.
What about, how do you view the Hall of Fame then? Do you view it as primarily just a building that's an honorific for the greatest players, but also, or should I say, more of a history of the game? Like, what is the percentage of
a shrine or a museum?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Well, the character clause, if you believe in that, I think it means that it is sort of, it is a shrine to some degree, and that character elements do matter. And, you know, to that end, that's why I actually think that the HGH issue is much more serious, because what those players did, not to name names to your St. Louis listeners, but what they did was undermine the game that came before them. They threw everything, the history of the game, into chaos. And, you know, it was a great sugar high for a few years, and the game was so exciting. But and the defense is always, well, they still had to hit the ball, but they were able to still stay healthy so much longer and get so much stronger and hit the ball so much further with advantages, artificial advantages that no player ever had before. I think those violations were much more serious than what Rose did, but they are on the ballot. Rose has never even had the chance to be on the ballot, and the writers are deciding and the voters are deciding, no, they jeopardized the integrity of the game too much. They may decide the same thing with Pete Rose, but they haven't even had the opportunity to make that judgment yet.
Oh, that's interesting. I know a lot of people agree with you on that, on like the PED stuff, that it is a more serious deal. I guess I just have a fundamental disagreement on that because of the nature of gambling. And like I said, if a player, if a player is purposely letting a ball go between his legs to lose a game, that's, a sport cannot survive that. You can survive guys hulking up and getting juiced up, because since the beginning of time, players have always been trying to find a way to get an edge. And some of it was stupid. I mean, they were taking, wasn't it like animal testosterone or something way back in the day? They thought it would help them.
Yeah.
Like really stupid stuff, but they've always been trying to gain an advantage. It's just that gambling, sometimes you can angle to actually do worse on purpose. And I think that's the problem.
Well, that's of course that's what Shoeless Joe is accused of doing.
Right.
He accepted a $5 bribe, and the argument for him as well. He played so well in that World Series. It doesn't seem like he threw it. By the way, the Reds won the 1919 World Series. The White Sox didn't have a chance anyway. So, yeah. I mean, it was the mighty Cincinnati Reds.
But, the mighty 1919 Reds.
Exactly. We all love them. I don't want to dismiss the seriousness of what Rose did. Baseball knew what he was doing for a while, and they were scared of how it could, the characters he was associating with and the danger he posed to the game. That's why the Reds didn't re-sign him, and he went to the Phillies. There's a new book called Charlie Hustle by Keith O'Brien, just published last year, that really sheds a lot of light on just how unsavory Rose's doings were. Mm-hmm. But there is no evidence he bet against the Reds, just none. Now, the counter argument is that's true, but when he didn't bet every day. So on days when he didn't bet for the Reds, that's almost as bad. But yeah, I agree with that. It's not a complete pass there, but there still isn't evidence that he ever threw a game. Rose was too much of a competitor to do that. And again, I don't want that to seem like I'm excusing what he did. I'm not, but there just isn't evidence that he ever willed the Reds to lose a game or anything like that.
Well, it seems like it will be a conversation for a while, and will be interesting to see what happens when the next Hall of Fame ballot rolls around. But
some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we let you go, again, we're speaking with Christopher Scalia, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. You have a new book that will be released in 5 days, May 20th. 13 books conservatives will love but probably haven't read. And what's so funny is I think right when you joined Jonah Goldberg on his podcast, I had just read My Antonia for the first time, like randomly. Yeah, I mean, just totally random. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's weird that I never read the book before, but did. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, the premise behind this book is that when you talk to conservatives about great fiction, and this my book focuses on novels that conservatives will love, they tend to talk about, if they talk about fiction at all, they talk about the same handful of novels. But there are so many great novels out there that of high literary merit, and B, explore principles and ideas and values that are especially important to conservatives. These novels aren't propaganda, but they look at the world and people in a way that conservatives will recognize. And you mentioned Willa Cather's great novel, My Antonia. That deals with issues about family, hard work, immigration, and just the greatness of the United States and the opportunities it offers. And so every novel I look at in this book, I go from the 18th century to more or less the present day, is a great novel, whatever your politics, but also looks at particular issues of greatest interest to conservatives.
Excellent. Well, and I imagine, did you have some of these conversations around the kitchen table growing up with, was it 9 siblings?
I still have 8 siblings. And we talked about books quite a lot in my house. You know, my father, some of the conservative thinkers I mentioned in my book, were introduced to me by my father, but my mother was really the literary influence in my family. She was always the one reading novels and getting us to read novels. So it was definitely, a deep family influence on this, in this book.
I will tell you this. I had a handful of friends who went to John Marshall Law School, University of Chicago Law School, and they saw your dad when he came in and visited a few times over the years, and they all said they were very impressed by him. So just wanted to pass that along to you. And
I appreciate it. Yeah, he was an impressive guy. a great speaker. He was always great in crowds, and he was a wonderful speaker.
That is exactly what they said.
Not a midday radio show host, but you do what you can.
No.
Hey, we're doing fine, I guess. I don't know. Christopher Scalia, it's awesome to talk to you. Thank you for giving us time on this. Thank you for talking about Pete Rose with us, even though you're wrong. We appreciate your time, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
It was great talking to you, Chris and Amy. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Christopher Scalia, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, with us here. His book, 13 Books Conservatives Will Love But Probably Haven't Read. It's coming out on May 20th.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.